From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, December 3rd, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
Yep, words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, an angry person is seldom reasonable. A reasonable person is seldom angry. Oh. Yep. And that's what makes me so angry.
Get off my phone, you jerk.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted history.
Here we go.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
So I've been told.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Really?
You might be quizzed.
All right. Under the remote possibility, very remote possibility that would happen, we'll pay attention. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1898, the Duquesne County and Athletic Club defeated an all-star collection of early football players, 16-0, in what's considered to be the first all-star game for professional American football. Now, when a sport is that new, how do you go about assembling all-stars? Is there something I'm missing here? Yeah, I suppose it could be done. All right, let's see here. What else do we have? Oh, yeah. On this day in 1992, a test engineer for the SEMA Group used a personal computer to send the world's first text message via the Vodafone network to the phone of a colleague. The message was an offer to buy his home for cash.
That's just stupid.
It was almost comical yesterday to watch the reaction of the conservative media in the wake of Joe Biden over the weekend pardoning his son Hunter, especially when Joe had said officially that he was not going to do it. But then again, how many lies do you think Joe Biden has told us over the nearly 4 years that he's been in office? Is it even possible to count them? Gee whiz, he no sooner gets up and gives a speech and a day later it's been debunked. So it's kind of like standard operating procedure, right? How can you tell a Democrat is lying? Their lips are moving. How many times has Nancy Pelosi lied to us? I mean, this has gone on and on and on and on. Well, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, he's of New York, Democrats, stated that a string of bomb threats targeting Democrat lawmakers were signed with MAGA. That's how they were signed. Bomb threats were sent out to Democrats and signed with MAGA. Pardon me while I do not believe it, particularly because of the timing. There have been several official reports of cabinet nominees in the Trump administration, the forthcoming Trump administration, who got bomb threats. A couple of them have been swatted. You're familiar with the procedure called swatting. Been a lot of harassment, and there will be. Once Donald Trump is inaugurated, there's going to be all kinds of reporting revolving around swatting, intimidation, bomb threats, death threats. Well, this was mentioned last week. So along comes Hakeem Jeffries now making the same claim, only spicing it up a little bit by claiming that these threats have been signed MAGA. Pardon me while I call bullshit on that. And he went on to state the Democrats will not be intimidated by violence, making no reference to the fact that several Republicans were targeted. And just so that you have a timeline, the Republicans who were targeted 3 days prior to Hakeem Jeffries' statement, which I think was made on Sunday. Anyhow, earlier this week, I'm sorry, my frame of reference here, my calendar is a little bit off. It was already toward the end of last week. It was revealed that several Trump cabinet nominees and their families were targeted with bomb threats. Here again, shouldn't be too surprising. Remember the incident regarding Sarah Huckabee Sanders' family being kicked out of the Red Hen restaurant? Which a lot of people don't know. A couple of weeks after that incident, the Red Hen had to close because there just nobody was going there. Anyhow, the Trump transition team did indeed confirm that several individuals, including Pete Hegseth, John Ratcliffe, and Elise Stefanik, were among those targeted, not limited to those, but were among those targeted with violent threats. Again, to be expected because this is how leftists operate. Mentally, leftists are nothing more than immature, adolescent-minded people. Okay? They throw temper tantrums. They get mean. They get ugly. And if you don't believe me, just watch one episode of The View. Listen to those hens. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to use that demeaning term because that's an insult to most women. You have my apologies. But, yeah, they just listen to or watch one episode of The View. And you start to get a picture of the leftist mind. And there's no greater example of that than Whoopi Goldberg. So, over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, a number of Democrat lawmakers were targeted with similar threats of violence, supposedly. Okay? And Jeffries wrote in a press release, "Yesterday during Thanksgiving celebration, several Democratic members of Congress, their families, and law enforcement officials were targeted with violent threats. These incidents ranged from detailed threats of a pipe bomb placed in mailboxes to swatting, all signed with MAGA at the conclusion of the message." And then he added that no injuries have been reported to lawmakers or their families. And I'm not calling BS on the threats. I believe that could very well have happened, yes. But I don't believe that they were signed with MAGA. But here's one thing to bear in mind about a threat. If somebody's going to take the time and go through the effort of sending a threat, in all probability, there is no real danger. Because if you want to take somebody out, are you going to warn them in advance? Are you going to make a threat? No, if you really want to take somebody out, you're going to keep your mouth shut and you're just going to do the dastardly deed and let it get over with. So anyhow, Jeffries went on. He says, "America is a democracy. Threats of violence against elected officials are unacceptable, unconscionable, and have no place in a civilized society. All perpetrators of political violence directed at any party must be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. House Democrats will not be deterred or intimidated from serving the people by violent threats. We have been in close communication with the Sergeant-at-Arms office, and it is imperative that Congress provide maximum protection for all members and their families moving forward." You would have to have been living under a rock over the long weekend, which a lot of people were. You know, I mean, it's a holiday thing, right? But in case you didn't hear, there was a lot of screeching on the part of the mainstream media and the left regarding the nomination of Kash Patel to head the FBI. You know, the deep state and the Uniparty reacted with just, I want to call it screeching. They're panicking. And the first unhinged attack they've launched against him is to say that he's unqualified. Of course, they always say that. They'd be remiss if they didn't, right? And of course, it's a joke. Because one can argue he's more qualified than any previous FBI director for the past three decades. Sweeping statement? Yes, it is. But there's some meat to back it up. Now, Trump advisor Alex Brusewitz took to X to highlight Patel's qualifications. Let me just read this to you, okay? So that you know it's not being made up. "Kash Patel is arguably the most qualified FBI director nominee in history. Here is his background." You listening? "Kash served as the chief of staff to the Department of Defense and deputy assistant to President Trump. As the chief of staff at DOD, his responsibilities included implementing the secretary's no-fail mission with our 3 million plus employees, operating a $740 billion budget and $2 trillion in assets. Cash served as Deputy Director of National Intelligence, where he oversaw all 17 intelligence community agencies and prioritized intelligence collection to focus on hard targets and global threats. He led the director's mission to synthesize our intelligence holdings and create the president's daily briefing, which he then briefed to the president and cabinet officials. Cash led President Trump's counterterrorism mission as deputy assistant to the president on the National Security Council and helped President Trump on his top priorities, including eliminating Al-Qaeda and ISIS senior leadership and safely repatriating dozens of American hostages. As the top counterterrorism official at the White House, Cash was responsible for creating and implementing our nation's policy to safeguard the homeland by overseeing the interagency implementation of the National CT Strategy. CT, that's counterterrorism. Cash served as the National Security Advisor and Senior Counsel for the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, where he spearheaded the presidential election, Russiagate, you know, where he spearheaded the investigation into the Russian active measures campaign to influence the 2016 presidential election, Russiagate. The investigation discovered numerous illegal surveillance measures undertaken by the Department. See, almost reactionary. By the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation to unlawfully spy on the Trump campaign. Concurrently, he led congressional oversight of sensitive programs for the IC and the U.S. Special Operations Forces, and worked to enact legislation to fully fund the multi-billion dollar budget supporting intelligence and counterterrorism operations worldwide. Okay, but IC, that's intelligence community, okay? Now, yes, it has its own community. Cash worked as a national security prosecutor at the DOJ under the Obama administration, where he led investigations spanning multiple theaters of conflict and oversaw the successful prosecution of criminals aligned with Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and other terror groups. This work necessitated Mr. Patel's presence in locations across the globe, collaborating with host nation governments to successfully prosecute terrorists. He also served as the DOJ liaison officer to Joint Special Operations Command, working with our nation's most prestigious counterterrorism units, special forces, to conduct collaborative global targeting operations against high-value objectives in almost every theater of war. Cash began his career as a public defender, trying scores of complex cases in federal and state courts, ranging from murder to narco-trafficking to complex financial crimes. Cash is exactly who we need to get the FBI back on track. Again, that's from Trump advisor Alex Brusewitz, answering the shrill leftist media. So he goes well beyond what they expect for any nominee to head up the FBI. The guy's a patriot, and he's a disruptor, and that makes him dangerous to the various bad guys in and out of government, particularly career government officials. So, in summary, Cash Patel's qualifications are more than impressive. His character is unimpeachable. His loyalty is to America and the Constitution. And this is why the deep state's going to go after him harder than they've gone after any of President Trump's other appointments. Because the deep state has only one frame of mind, and that is to keep themselves in business, sucking off of the public, you know what. So, Patel represents a paradigm shift in what's been the deep state's most reliable domestic tool, the FBI. They don't just fear him for what he'll do. They despise him for what he represents. So it's not hyperbole to say Cash Patel may prove to be President Trump's most consequential appointment. Think about that. When it comes to matters of illegal immigration, and I hate to use that word immigration because the more appropriate word is invasion, illegal invasion of our country, seems like Eagle Pass, Texas is the focal point. It's ground zero. This is where the critical mass of this issue is. And incoming border czar Tom Homan, who is just a saint in my eyes, has made it clear that states like Texas are about to have an ally in the White House when it comes to securing the southern border. Now, Mr. Homan and Texas Governor Greg Abbott promised a new era of cooperation between the federal government and states eager to secure the border as President-elect Trump and his deportation plan all take shape. This administration is in the building stages right now. But the two served early Thanksgiving meals to Texas Department of Public Safety law enforcement and Texas National Guard members last week, which I thought was a nice deal. Darlene McCormick Sanchez, writing for the Epoch Times, has a real nice report on that. And it's titled, What to Expect from Trump Administration's Mass Deportation Plans. States that are willing to help could work with the federal government to patrol the southwest border and even arrest illegal immigrants. So there's a lot of thought going into this. And Homan said, the first morning I woke up with a smile on my face was the day after the election when President Trump won, because he's going to come back. He's going to finish the job he started. Now, ideas floated by Trump and Homan so far include quickly rolling back policies from the Biden administration, issuing a national emergency declaration, which I think is a must, and using the military to assist in deportations, reinstating executive orders from Trump's first administration, activating the 1798 Alien Enemies Act, defunding NGOs, you know, non-government organizations. This is a must. And then partnering with willing states. Now, these NGOs usually take the form of church groups. I know the very church that I grew up in, the Lutheran Church, is really big on this. Assisting illegal aliens with getting them repatriated here in that's not the right word, but getting acclimated to living in America, helping them find jobs maybe. And these are all noble efforts, but these NGOs are exactly that, non-government organizations. So they have this pet project of theirs that they want to accomplish, and that is assisting illegal aliens with no regard whatsoever to the legality. And that's where I draw the line. That's where everybody should draw the line. Now, it's interesting to note here that Homan praised the Texas model of border enforcement over the past 4 years, which included erecting fencing, we got razor wire along the border, placing barriers in the Rio Grande, you've seen those buoys, and building our own border wall. Now, Texas recently offered the incoming administration a 1,400-acre ranch to use as a deportation hub. And Mr. Homan said the sheer number of unvetted illegal immigrants, again, I prefer to use the word aliens, crossing the border has also created a threat to national security that must be addressed. Now, he said, the illegal immigrants who evade capture, known as gotaways, aren't counted in the 10.8 million illegal immigrant encounters documented by U.S. Customs and Border Protection since 2021. And they're particularly concerning because they don't want to get caught for a reason. So Homan said, if you don't think a single one of the 2 million that came from a country sponsor of terror aren't coming to do us harm, then you're an idiot. That's what I love about Tom Homan. I mean, he speaks very candidly. There's no doubt as to what he means when he speaks. So details of what the national model might look like remain in flux. Logistically speaking, removing millions of illegal immigrants stands to be complicated, of course, especially with resistance expected from some sanctuary states and pro-immigration groups. I mean, look at the dust-up we're having with the mayor of Denver. But apparently, there are some cracks in his tough veneer. Now, Hans von Spakovsky, he's the senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, great organization, said he expects the Trump administration will immediately drop federal lawsuits against state efforts to stop illegal immigration. He said, I have no doubt that Tom Homan will direct Department of Homeland Security to work hand and glove with states like Texas that want to stop this. It'll be a complete reversal of what's happened over the past 4 years. Now, Trump has nominated South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem to lead DHS, which encompasses ICE, Border Patrol, as well as several other agencies, including the U.S. Secret Service and the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Yeah, FEMA, that FEMA. Now, former chief of the U.S. Border Patrol, a fellow by the name of Rodney Scott, who served under both Trump and Biden, said that Trump is likely going to build upon what he did in his first term. Now, Scott, who's now a senior fellow for border security with the Texas Public Policy Foundation, good organization, I'm on their mailing list, said the Trump administration could expand the 287G program. Now, the program is currently being used to coordinate ICE taking custody of illegal migrants arrested on criminal charges by state and local law enforcement. Yeah, there's that aspect of things, too. Now, it could be expanded to allow a task force to train and deputize local and state law enforcement to arrest illegal immigrants. These are all steps that need to be taken. Under federal law, sanctuary states and cities can't stop federal agents from apprehending illegal immigrants. That's just a fact. So what will likely happen in those states and cities is that ICE is going to have to take them into custody by going to their homes instead of picking them up in jails. They can do that. So Mr. Scott said that a lot of the money being used to aid illegal immigrants can now be put toward enforcement. For example, millions of dollars put toward temporary tents used to process illegal immigrants can now be used as staging areas to deport them. Scott said while the Trump administration may prioritize removing criminals and those with deportation orders first, people who've overstayed a visa or crossed into the country illegally are not safe from deportation under the law. This appears to be a very comprehensive program. Now, while some state leaders are happy to work with the feds, others have vowed to push back. Of course, blue state governors, for instance, in Massachusetts and Arizona, have indicated they won't allow the use of state resources to cooperate with Trump's deportation agenda. Okay. Now that we know this, we know who to look for. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey said in an MSNBC interview shortly after Trump won, she says, no, absolutely not. I do think it's important that we all recognize that there's going to be a lot of pressure on states and state officials. I can assure you we're going to work hard to deliver. Well, Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs said that she was going to cooperate with Trump on stopping the illegal importation of fentanyl, but suggested deportation of illegal immigrants would harm Arizona families. Maybe so. But these people broke into our country illegally, with the help of the Biden administration, of course. And Hobbs also said, I'll stand up to protect Arizonans from harm by the federal government from anyone. I'm not going to comment on hypotheticals. We don't know what a mass deportation plan will look like, what resources it will involve. You know, and she says, this is what got me in her statement. I will stand up to protect Arizonans. Well, if you're an illegal alien, you are not an Arizonan. Just because you drove through Arizona or because you broke into Arizona does not make you an Arizona citizen. Now, earlier this month, Illinois and Colorado governors, both Democrats, announced the formation of an alliance to resist Trump's policies, including aspects of deportation. One of the biggest jerks of all when it comes to governors is Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. He's a fabulously wealthy man, and he's an extreme leftist, which just doesn't compute with me. How can somebody who is so successful, somebody who's so wealthy, be a leftist? But that's the case. So you got Pritzker and Colorado Governor Jared Polis leading the newly created Governor's Safeguarding Democracy to prevent authoritarianism and the undermining of democratic institutions. See, that's the way they frame this stuff. Just because we're trying to enforce the law, just because we're trying to enforce the sovereignty of this nation of ours, just because we're trying to enforce the Constitution, that is a threat against democracy? Well, we all know that's BS. But this is the way they, on the left, frame it. This is a threat to democracy. How many times have we heard that term from the mouth of none other than liar number one, Joe Biden? This is the greatest threat to democracy. MAGA is the greatest threat to democracy. Bullcorn. Oh, and then you got that pinhead up there in New York, Governor Kathy Hochul, saying during a news conference last week that she would work with Trump on deporting known criminals who were in the country illegally. So she's kind of limiting the scope there, right? However, she said that if the incoming administration tries to harm New Yorkers or roll back their rights, she would fight it every step of the way. Now, what does she mean by rolling back their rights? Well, she doesn't know what she means by that. I can just about guarantee that. She's just using that term to muddy the waters. And likewise, leaders of Democrat-run cities like L.A. and Denver have announced they have no plans to cooperate with the deportation of illegal immigrants. But it's like Tom Homan said it so eloquently last week. He said, okay, you don't want to help? Fine, but don't get in our way. Let's move on over to the comedy corner. We need some comic relief, and boy, are you going to get it with David Harris.
My name's David Harris. I am a comedian, but I started as a magician. Thank you. I'm sorry, wizard, level 17. I started performing magic in bars when I was 15 years old, up close at people's tables. And there was always that one drunk guy, hey, can you make my wife disappear? It's like, you know what, sir? I'm surprised she's not gone already. Now pick a card. It's good to be here. I do a lot of corporate events. I did one recently in Caledonia, Minnesota, on purpose, and it was really fun. Actually, I came up to the caterer after the show. I said, you should have a public comedy and magic show here. And she said, maybe the comedy. I was like, well, what about the magic? And she goes, we're a little religious. And I wanted to be like, you know, it's not real. And then throw a smoke bomb down and totally vanish. She would have been like, oh my God, Satan. And I would have been like, no, David Harris. My name is David Harris. Growing up, my nickname was David Harry Butt, which didn't really bother me, but now it's true, and that pisses me off. Actually, growing up, my mom would be like, you know, Harris is a black name. And I'd be like, why are we whispering? Are they here? Are they gonna get us? And now I know that Harris is actually a Jewish name, Mom. Because we're Jewish. So we should probably whisper.
That'll do it. You get out there and make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.